Go outside, look at the trees, the grass, the sky, and ask yourself the question, why do I see something rather than nothing? And if you want to get more introspective, ask yourself, why do I see at all? If you want to really blow your mind, ask yourself the question, why am I asking myself this question? Why is there something rather than nothing?
Welcome to Pathway to Victory with Dr. Robert Jeffress, and thanks for taking the time to listen to the program today. Yesterday, we set out on this brand new series called How Can I Know? We're taking a look at seven of life's most important questions. Now, Dr. Jeffress will be tackling each one of these fundamental questions by providing clear evidence for each one, so you'll be fully prepared to answer them when you're faced with these questions yourself. This first topic is looking at the most basic question that has to be answered, since everything else falls right in line with it. We saw yesterday that there are five sources of doubt that cause us to question the very existence of God. And today, we're continuing by hearing the first of our four evidences of proof. Here's Dr. Robert Jeffress in the second half of How Can I Know There Is a God?
You know that science is built on what we call naturalism. Naturalism says nature is all that there is. That is, only that which I can see, observe, measure, test, replicate, that's the only thing that really is real. Nature is all that there is. You learned in school about the scientific method, being able to observe things and test things and replicate things. That's based on naturalism. Nature is all that there is. And that means in science, the way it's defined today, in science, there is no allowance for the supernatural. Super means above and beyond. Supernatural means that which is above and beyond that which we can see or measure or test or replicate. What if, just for the sake of argument, it could be proved one day that the origin of life can be traced to a very invisible but very real creator? Wouldn't that, if in fact it were true, be a scientific explanation for why things are the way they are, as well as a religious explanation? It's a profound mistake, ladies and gentlemen, to allow scientists to get away with equating science with reality and then limiting the definition of science to only that which I can see and measure and replicate. Because if you allow scientists to equate science with reality, and then you say science is only what I see, measure, and replicate, then you have to say reality is only what I can see, measure, and replicate. And therefore, there is no allowance for the supernatural. The fact is, scientists engage in circular reason. They start with the presupposition, there is no God, there is no allowance for the supernatural, therefore, any explanation I come up with has to be based on the natural. Philosopher Alvin Plantinga demonstrates the absurdity of such a circular argument. He says, it is like the drunk who insisted on looking for his lost car keys only under the street light on the grounds that the light was better there. In fact, it would go the drunk one better. It would insist that because the keys would be hard to find in the dark, they have to be under the light. Now, that's what the evolutionist says. Oh, there can't be any explanation for the way things are out there in something I can't see. It has to be in what I can see. And therefore, I'm going to cut off any serious inquiry to another explanation for the origin of all things. And that brings up an interesting question. What, can we prove the existence of God? Now, I have to concede the atheists are correct here. It is impossible to prove the existence of God. But there's a difference between proof and evidence. And let me illustrate the difference for you this way. Earlier this week, I was in my study, working, preparing this message, and I heard somebody typing on a computer keyboard in the office next to me. And I concluded that that person was my assistant, Carolyn Baker. Now, I didn't see her. I couldn't see her. But I knew it was her. How did I come to that conclusion, since I couldn't see her? Well, I came to that conclusion because, number one, her office is next to mine. Secondly, I had just talked to her 60 seconds earlier on the extension that I saw light up from her office. And third, the only time anybody ever sits at her desk and types and it's not Carolyn is when she's on vacation, and I happen to know she wasn't on vacation. So the evidence suggested it was Carolyn. Now, could I prove it was Carolyn? I couldn't prove it. I mean, the truth is, it could have been the President of the United States sitting there typing away. Now, I agree, it's not likely, but it's in the realm of possibility it could have been. But the evidence pointed strongly that it was Carolyn instead. Now, that's true when it comes to the existence of God. We cannot prove that God exists, but the evidence argues strongly for the existence of God. And there are a lot of people, it doesn't matter what evidence you present, they are not going to accept the evidence that there is a God. A lot of people don't want to be confused with the facts. I think about the story about the man who went to a psychiatrist. He said, "Doctor, I'm afraid I'm dead." And the psychiatrist said, "That's impossible. You are not dead." He said, "No, I'm absolutely confident I'm dead." The psychiatrist said, "You can't be dead." The man said, "I'm dead, and there's nothing you can do to prove otherwise." The psychiatrist had a thought. He asked his patient, "Do dead men bleed?" The patient said, "Well, no, dead men don't bleed." So the psychiatrist took out his pocket knife. He nicked his patient's finger. The finger started to bleed profusely. The patient looked down his finger and said, "What do you know? Dead men do bleed." And that's what a lot of people think about evidence. It doesn't matter what you say to them, they are not going to believe. And can we prove God exists? No. But the atheist cannot prove that God doesn't exist. Mortimer Adler, the famed philosopher and legal scholar, says that it is absolutely impossible to prove a negative existential proposition. He uses this illustration. He said, let's say you have one man who says there is such a thing as a red eagle, and another person who says there's no such thing as a red eagle. The man who believes in a red eagle, to prove it, would have to produce one. That's all he would have to do. But to prove that there is no such thing as a red eagle means that you would have to scour the entire universe. You'd have to search every square inch of it to make absolutely certain there was no such thing as a red eagle, something that's impossible to do. It's the same thing when it comes to the existence of God. Can we prove God exists? No, we can't prove it. But what I'm going to do in this session is share with you four powerful pieces of evidence for the existence of God. And when you look and examine those four powerful pieces of evidence, then you have to come to your own conclusions. Does the evidence point toward or away from the existence of God? What is that evidence? First of all, there's the cosmological evidence for the existence of God. The cosmological evidence. Here's the question. Why is there something rather than nothing? That's what the cosmological argument is. Why is there something rather than nothing? Look up at me for just a moment. Look at this podium. Look at this platform. Look at the music stand. Look at the pew you're sitting in. Go outside. Look at the trees, the grass, the sky, and ask yourself the question, why do I see something rather than nothing? And if you want to get more introspective, ask yourself, why do I see at all? And if you want to really blow your mind, ask yourself the question, why am I asking myself this question? Why is there something rather than nothing? Now, here's the naturalist, the atheistic explanation for the origin of everything in the universe. Here's the formula. Write it down. No one times nothing equals everything. No one times nothing equals everything. That's how the atheist explains the existence of the universe. And yet the vastness of the universe, not to mention the existence of you and me, strongly suggests there had to be a creator. Think for just a moment with me about the vastness of this universe in which we live. You know, we live in the Milky Way galaxy. And the Milky Way galaxy contains about 100 billion stars. 100 billion stars. Now, the average distance between stars and the Milky Way galaxy is 30 trillion miles. Now, to give you an idea of how vast a space that is, let's imagine you wanted to travel from one star to the next star 30 trillion miles away. And let's say you were able to buy one of those decommissioned space shuttles, that traveled at 17,000 miles an hour. So you took off from one star and you headed toward that star 30 trillion miles away. Do you know how long it would take you to get there going 17,000 miles an hour? It would take you 201,000 years. To put that in perspective, that means if you left on the day Jesus Christ was born, from then until today, you would have traveled just 1% of the distance and had 99% more to go. 201,000 years just to go from one star in the Milky Way galaxy to the next star. And guess what? There are 100 billion stars you would still have to travel in the Milky Way galaxy. And remember, the Milky Way galaxy is just one of hundreds of billions of galaxies still in our universe. And our universe continues to expand.
You're listening to Pathway to Victory with Dr. Robert Jeffress in this series called How Can I Know? Answers to Life's Seven Most Important Questions. We'll get back to the message in just a minute. Today's message comes from the series called How Can I Know? Which is also the title of Dr. Jeffress's brand new book. In this book, he takes a look at seven of the most common and challenging questions people have come up with when it comes to God, the Bible, and religion. And then he gives us solid, accurate biblical evidence on how to answer those tough questions. Now, if you've ever been backed up against the wall because you didn't know how to answer someone's question, and that's all of us at some time or another, then you need to get this book right away. You'll be so glad that you did. Think about it. Now you'll know exactly how to respond to people's questions. Call right now with your generous gift of any amount to get your copy of How Can I Know? Call 1-866-999-2965. Or you can go online, that might be easiest, ptv.org. And if you can give $75 or more, we've got a great offer for you. How Can I Know? The tabbed study guide in a beautiful binder, as well as all 11 CDs from this great series. So call 1-866-999-2965 or online, ptv.org. I'll mention all that a bit later, but right now, let's get back to the rest of the program. Here's Dr. Jeffress.
Now, how did all of this come into being? How do you explain it? Well, for many years, the atheists, the scientists argued that the universe was eternal and therefore had always existed. And by the way, let me just stop here and say, some people are going to say, well, it's unfair for you to equate atheists with evolutionists. The fact is, not all evolutionists are atheists, and I will concede that. Not all evolutionists are atheists, but I've never met an atheist who's not an evolutionist. Because they're looking for some alternative explanation for why things are the way they are. Well, for many years, the naturalists, the evolutionists, the scientists, they argued, well, the universe has been eternal. It doesn't need a first cause. Because by definition, whatever is eternal doesn't need a cause. And therefore, since the universe is eternal, like Carl Sagan says, the cosmos is all that there is. Since the universe is eternal, it doesn't need a first cause. But guess what has happened? Scientists have shot themselves in the foot because they have proved that the universe now, they have proved it wasn't eternal. They have now demonstrated that the universe, in fact, had a beginning to it. Now, that only makes sense. Remember the second law of thermodynamics? The second law of thermodynamics says that usable energy in the universe is diminishing. It's being depleted. Now think about it. If the universe had been eternal, it means it had an infinite past. And if the universe had an infinite past and it started out with this quantity of energy and we know energy is being depleted, then the universe would be out of energy by now. That's why we know that the universe is not infinite. In the 1930s, a Belgian priest turned astronomer named Georges Lemaître theorized that the entire universe at one time was packed into a dense mass of matter that was being heated at trillions of degrees, and that about 13.7 billion years ago, there was an explosion of that mass of matter that created the entire universe, which continues to expand. Lemaître described his theory as, quote, the cosmic egg exploding at the moment of creation. Sometime later, Fred Hoyle took Lemaître's theory and coined the phrase the Big Bang Theory. The Big Bang Theory is the operational theory still today by scientists of how this world came and this universe came into being. Respected astronomers like Edwin Hubble, for whom the famed Hubble telescope is named, confirmed that there are a myriad of other galaxies beyond our Milky Way, that the universe is indeed expanding, and therefore the universe had to have a beginning. Interestingly, on April the 23rd, 1992, a team of scientists released the findings of the Cosmic Background Explorer satellite called COBE that confirmed what Hubble and Lemaitre had said, that there had to be a beginning of the universe. Now, that is a huge concession by scientists, that the universe had a beginning, because that fact raises a number of questions. First of all, from where did that dense mass of matter come from that eventually exploded? Scientists like to say that the dense mass of matter always existed, but is that logical, to believe that something came out of nothing? And the closely related question is, what is it that caused that dense mass of matter to explode? If the universe has always been here, that mass of matter has always been here, what is it that caused that mass of matter to explode? There had to be a first cause. Let me illustrate that for you this way. Have you ever seen those domino displays that take minutes to collapse? You know, people will set up a big display of dominoes in the shape of a United States flag or the shape of our country, and it takes minutes as you watch those dominoes collapse. Let's just imagine you're flipping through the news channels, and you stop and you see this mass of dominoes toppling over. And you sit there and watch it for a few minutes because you don't have anything better to do with your time. Now, you didn't see the beginning of that segment. You didn't see it starting. You're just watching the dominoes collapsing. But in your mind, you assume that even though you didn't see it, there had to be somebody who toppled over that first domino and set everything into motion, right? It's the same thing with the universe. If the universe had a beginning, and science has now proved that it did have a beginning, there had to be a first cause that is transcendent, that is above science, that is above matter, that is above energy, some first cause that toppled that first domino and set everything into motion. Interestingly, even skeptics concede that the idea that nothing produces nothing is ridiculous. As the skeptic David Hume wrote, "But allow me to tell you that I never asserted so absurd a proposition as that anything might arise without a cause." Ladies and gentlemen, it is a simple but profound truth. Out of nothing comes nothing. The evidence strongly suggests that there was an eternal first cause that brought everything into existence. Now, stay with me on this. Some people would say, but isn't it contradictory and even hypocritical to say that it is impossible for the universe to be eternal and without cause, and yet at the same time to say God is eternal and without cause? I mean, if you're lambasting and ridiculing the idea that the universe didn't have a first cause, why are you so sure that God didn't have a first cause? Now, stay with me on this. Both atheist and theist believe that whatever is eternal by definition doesn't need a cause. That's something both atheists and believers in God concede. If something is eternal, it's without cause. Now, the atheists, the scientists, the evolutionists used to believe that the universe was eternal and therefore it didn't need a first cause. But as I just demonstrated to you, now science has proved that the universe wasn't eternal, that it had a first cause, and because of that, it demands some kind of first cause to set everything into motion. The reason God doesn't need a first cause is, according to the definition with which theists and atheists believe, God is eternal, and therefore anything that is eternal like God doesn't necessitate a first cause. Amazingly, even strident atheists concede the possibility that there may be a cause for everything that exists. Richard Dawkins, again, the author of the best-selling atheistic book, The God Delusion, concedes that there might be some transcendent cause to explain the origin of the cosmos. In an interview with Time magazine, I want you to listen to what Richard Dawkins said. He said, quote, "There could be something incredibly grand and incomprehensible and beyond our present understanding." that explains why things are the way they are. And the reporter from Time magazine asked the follow-up question, could this something incredibly grand, could it be God? Dawkins conceded, yes. But it could be any of a billion gods, Dawkins said. It could be the god of the Martians or the inhabitants of Alpha Centauri. The chance of it being a particular god, Yahweh, the God of Jesus, is vanishingly small, Dawkins said. Author Mark Middleberg offers a great response to Dawkins' concession. He said, you can call him what you want, but the evidence from the origin of the universe tells us a lot about what he is like. And the description sounds amazingly similar to what the Bible tells us about one particular God, who is actually the God called Yahweh, the God of Jesus, the creator of the world. The often asked question, if God is real, why hasn't he revealed himself to us? I mean, after all, if God would simply reveal himself, then nobody would have any doubts about him. That question is built upon the false premise that God hasn't revealed himself. As we've seen today, God has revealed himself in the universe that he created. And that's why the psalmist said in Psalm 19:1, the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of his hands. When famed astronaut John Glenn was 77 years old, he was invited to take a ride in the space shuttle Discovery. And as he was in outer space at age 77, he looked out that spacecraft window. And he made this comment. He said, to look out at this kind of creation and not believe in God is to me impossible. While the existence of the universe, the cosmological argument, is a powerful argument for the existence of God, the atheist is right when he says it's a giant leap of faith to go from a first cause to the personal God of the Bible. However, God has left some other fingerprints in the universe that tell us even more about himself. And next time, we're going to look at three more powerful arguments for the existence of God.
Thank you, Dr. Jeffress, and thank you for listening to Pathway to Victory today. We look forward to hearing more next time. Now, you heard me mention earlier about the resource that we have for you by Dr. Jeffress, which is his brand new book called How Can I Know? Answers to Life's 7 Most Important Questions. Now, this book is filled with life application on how you can address each of these fundamental questions with a whole lot of confidence, verified evidence, and biblical accuracy. You're not going to feel backed into a corner anymore. Imagine that. These questions come firing at you one at a time, and now you're going to know exactly how to answer them and what exactly to say. This book won't be something that you just add to your library. You're going to actually use it on a regular basis in dealing with these very common questions from your friends and your coworkers. So call and get your copy of Dr. Jeffress's new book that has just been released. The number to call is 866-999-2965, or you can go online at ptv.org. That's probably the easiest way to do it. Get to your computer, tablet, or your smartphone. Your generous gift of any amount will get you the book called How Can I Know? Or for $75 or more, we're going to add the complete TAB study guide in a beautiful binder and also every one of the CDs from this series. Do it right away, 1-866-999-2965 or online at ptv.org. Well, we're just about ready to wrap things up, but Dr. Jeffress, I know you've got a few more thoughts you'd like to share with us on today's program.
Tomorrow, we're going to look at another powerful argument for the existence of God. We call it the teleological argument. Simply put, how do you explain the design and complexity of the universe apart from God? And of course, the short answer is, you can't. The design and complexity of this universe argue strongly for the existence of God. And I'll show you why tomorrow on Pathway to Victory. Now, yesterday I told you about an incredible offer our team is making to you, our listeners, this month. Now, for your gift of any amount, we would love to send you my book, How Can I Know? Answers to Life's Most Important Questions. But listen to this. For your gift of $75 or more that will help us in the ministry of Pathway to Victory, we will send you the book,
we will send you the 11 CDs containing all of the messages you're going to hear this month, and we will also send you an 8.5 by 11 binder with tabs in it containing about 4 or 5 pages of notes for every message you're going to hear in this series. It's an incredible offer. It can be yours for your gift of $75 or more. Now, to take advantage of the offer, call us at our toll-free number, 1-866-999-2965. That's 1-866-999-2965, or go onto our website at ptv.org. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of Pathway to Victory.
Thanks again for joining us today on Pathway to Victory with Dr. Robert Jeffress. Go to our website, ptv.org, to share your thoughts on the message today that was preached by Dr. Jeffress, pastor of First Baptist Church of Dallas. And don't forget to call with your generous gift to this ministry to get your copy of this fantastic new book by Dr. Jeffress called How Can I Know? You know, you're not going to feel stumped or cornered anymore when you use the insights of this foundational new book by Dr. Jeffress on a regular basis to answer your friends' questions. The number is 1-866-999-2965. Or you can go to ptv.org. That's 1-866-999-2965 or ptv.org. Be sure to join us tomorrow for Wednesday's program as Dr. Jeffress continues this foundational confidence-building series called How Can I Know? We'll see you next time, right here on Pathway to Victory.